Let's go ahead and just jump right in.
Sure.
My name is Kevin Doherty, and I'm a licensed acupuncturist practicing in Superior, Colorado. And I'm also a coach and consultant to acupuncturists all around North America. And what's really cool is all over the world at this point, we have clients from just about everywhere, which is really exciting. Basically helping people build, helping practitioners build more. So really excited to be on the call tonight with Lonnie Jarrett, who is somebody I consider to be one of my primary mentors and one of the greatest influences in my life in terms of getting me to where I am both professionally and personally. So, Lonnie, first of all, I just wanted to take a quick moment to say thank you so much for joining us all tonight and for taking time out of your schedule to impart some of your knowledge to us.
Well, I appreciate it very much, Kevin, and I appreciate the effort you've put in. And it's really a pleasure to be with everyone. I mean, it's totally my honor. And really, I mean, it's all about making connections and human relationship to really, really take the profession further, take the medicine further, and make the impact that we, you know, can potentially have in humanity, which is really what it's all about. So thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, my pleasure. And, you know, when you mentioned the kind of term of connectivity or community, I mean, that is a lot of why I'm doing what I'm doing as well. Is I think we, you know, what I've noticed coaching other acupuncturists is that there are a lot of really amazing people doing this work, but a lot of them feel like they're kind of practicing in a vacuum or, you know, they're kind of doing it all on their own. So I think it's a really special opportunity to be able to, you know, hear from somebody who's obviously been through a lot in the field and who's had a lot of success and has a lot of great things to share. So, Lonnie, I thought what I could do maybe just real quick is just give everybody on the call a very quick kind of background of you, just from what I know of you, and I'm sure you're going to be able to expand on that in just a minute here. But I think we have quite a few people on the call who are new to your work, and I just want to give them a quick orientation, okay?
Sure, sure.
So Lonnie's been practicing Chinese medicine. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe since 1986. And
I graduated in 86 and began in the school clinic in 85, but, you know, full-time since 86, sure.
Gotcha, yeah. And you you practice in Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And Lonnie is, in my opinion, the author of two of the greatest books out there on Chinese medicine, Nourishing Destiny and the Clinical Practice of Chinese Medicine. And highly recommended if you haven't picked those up already. Those are a great kind of a two-year clinical integration course, which we'll hit on just a little bit more down the road on this call. But Lonnie, why don't you maybe just expand upon those thoughts just a little bit and give us a sense of your background, kind of what got you interested in Chinese medicine, and maybe a little bit more about where you're at today and a little bit about the work that you're doing.
To cover the past very quickly, I've just, for some mysterious reason, been interested in Chinese philosophy and history my whole life. Began reading it when I was in my early teens and went through graduate school in neurosciences, all the while studying Chinese medicine, and eventually went to the traditional acupuncture institute where I graduated in 1986. I met Leon Hammer there, and I spent 10 years studying with him, following him in his clinic and running all of his workshops out of my office from 86 through the end of 95. And as you say, wrote the two books that I've written. I've been teaching in the field for 23 years. And more to my current interest, really, you know, the thing that got me interested in medicine, I mean, one of my earliest memories, as early as when I was 3 years old, was realizing that I wanted to be a healer. And as I grew, you know, as I grew older and came up in the 60s and in the early 70s, going to Chinese medicine really for the sake of a social revolution, I thought that the world-centric, holistic, and integral values of the medicine had the potential to really change culture. And what I've experienced in the years I've been working is that it has a tremendous potential to change culture, but that potential really hasn't been embraced by the community at large and hasn't really been tapped. And I think I've learned what it's going to take to really do it. I'm just as enthusiastic as I ever have been about Chinese medicine, acupuncture, Chinese herbal medicine, the medicine as a whole, as a strong force for social change. And I think now I know really what it takes to do that, which is it demands everything from us as practitioners, really. It's not so much the theory we know, the particular tradition we practice isn't that important. What really matters is who we are, how hard we're striving to live up to as practitioners, the highest ideals we've embraced. What is the reason we became healers? To really take those ideals
very seriously.
Any individual does that, they're going to see that those ideals require everything from the practitioner in terms of their own development. And I literally think that the most important thing for us practitioners is to become the kind of human being that other human beings, just when they're in our presence, before we've put in a needle, before we've given a nerve, before we've given any advice, just who we are should create a felt sense in the people we're working with of a higher potential that's possible for them to actually live. We need to be the kind of people who create an actual, what I would call evolutionary tension, an evolutionary pull on people. We really need to become the kind of people who it's impossible for other people to be cynical in the presence of. Now, of course, you can't underestimate a postmodern person's capacity for cynicism, but we really need to do everything we can to live with integrity up to the highest values we've recognized. And, you know, the values of holistic and integral medicine are fairly well advanced. It's really only 10 or 15% of the world that could possibly relate to them anyway. So we're really talking about something very great required from us, I would say, in terms of self-realization and actualization.
Yeah, well, that's very, very well said. And I'm just, you know, a lot of questions are flooding to my mind as you're making these comments here. But I guess the first one is, what do you notice it takes on the part of the average practitioner out there in order to, basically achieve those, you know, those higher ideals, or to, you know, kind of consistently actualize those ideals?
Well, this is the one thing in a person's life that's solely in their hand. It's solely in their hands. There's nothing external in life that could stop a person who's really sincerely interested in living up to their highest ideals from doing it. And we all find, if we really sincerely make an effort to strive to do that, we all find that a very large part of us doesn't want to. And it's really good to look at the different forces and become familiar with the different forces within the self, to take on our own cynicism and our own doubt and our own inertia and our own real lack of interest, and actually begin to develop both some humility about it, because none of us are really as interested as we like to think we are in these higher things, and also to develop the wisdom that from actually pushing ahead in the face of our own resistance. And it's so important that we do this, because only in this way as human beings will we develop the capacity to then be able to look at our patients and have compassion for their own struggle in the face of their own resistance, but not just compassion, to be able to see the truth of that resistance and help relate to the part of them that actually is all ready to go. It doesn't have resistance. And we're only going to be able to find the best part of the patient, the part of the person that literally never had a problem, doesn't have a problem, and never could have a problem, if we've really taken the time to cultivate attention to that part of ourselves. And not just to cultivate the attention there, to become very familiar with it, but to shift our identity away from the part of us that is just chronically cynical, lazy, and inertic, and shift our attention away from that and on to the part of us, its bags are packed, it's ready to go, it's outside the door, the taxi's waiting, it's saying, come on, let's go. And we're all saying, I need more time. I need more time to heal. So I'm interested, who are really ready in their own lives to renounce the right to take any more time for their own healing. You see?
Absolutely.
Because the worst part of us loves healing, but never has any intention of being healed. It loves seeking, but it has no intention of ever becoming a finder. And I'll just note that the people in our profession are holistic, they're integral thinkers. It's a very advanced state evolutionarily, only 10, maybe 15% tops out of close to 7 billion people in the world have reached a level of development where they could even understand holistic and integral value spheres. And it's kind of a sin for people who are so fortunate, who've had the luck to have shelter, good quality food, and shop at Whole Foods, and have good nutrition, social freedom, political freedom, a couple of master's degrees, maybe a doctorate degree. And it's just a sin when people who are healthcare practitioners are still needing more time. By healing, I mean needing more time to get over their own past.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm really looking for, Kevin, is I think it's critical that what we want is a significant minority of practitioners who are really at a level of development where they're ready to shift their attention away from needing to overcome their own history to actually creating a more wholesome future right now.
Mm.
And when a patient, when a practitioner has really shifted away from getting over their own past and really committed to dropping it for the sake of creating the future, that quality of consciousness, believe me, it's infectious. It's like a virus. It makes more possible in the treatment room than we would ever be sheerly technically or intellectually capable of. And it pulls forth the potential both in our own souls and from our patient souls, which is greater than anything we ever could have imagined.
Mm-hmm. So that makes a lot of sense. And I think I'm sure it does to a lot of people on the call here. Quick question that I have, and I hear this a lot in the coaching that I do with other practitioners, Lonnie, and that's why I wanted to. One of the questions I hear a lot is, if I start to notice that I have this kind of rather large part of me that doesn't seem very interested or is cynical or is ambivalent about the process, or about, living here now, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
What do I do with that? Like, the question how comes up a lot, like, how do I change that, or how do I know how to relate to that? And, what I hear you saying is it has a lot to do with shifting your attention, like shifting your awareness kind of away from that aspect of yourself and towards something inside of you that's more forward moving, so to speak. But is there anything that you could say about that would kind of enlighten that topic for us?
Well, sure. I mean, the fact that we experience cynicism, lethargy, inertia, disinterest, it isn't a problem that we experience that. It's really merely a question of what part of our experience are we going to pay attention to and what part of our experience do we identify with. So it's just merely a fact that the human mind, which orients us in time and space and stores memory, emotional memory, intellectual memory, it stores thoughts, how we felt about our past, what we think about our past, all the conclusions we drew, that's always going to be there. It's not going to go anywhere, but the simple fact is that self out of it. My whole first book was, and we experienced a real higher state experience. Any experience at all beyond what we could call ego immediately sees that all of that's a complete illusion.
Mm.
It's just a complete illusion. So it's not a problem that it's there. It's not a problem that we have emotions. And I'm certainly not saying we should neurotically deny anything we're feeling or deny anything we're thinking. But the basic fundamental revelation that would occur to meditate or look into these things really sincerely with the intention of becoming a finder. Right? And that's very important because many people do practices with no intention of ever becoming a finder. But a person who's sincere wants it now. Always now. Now, it may take time, but they always want it now. And they're always sincerely looking for it right now. And,
that's a really important point right there. I just wanted to clarify that. So if people are doing some sort of spiritual work on themselves, meditation, finder, what do you notice their intention is in that situation? What are they trying to do? Just feel better, basically?
Well, look, it's just very simple. If a person wants to change, and the kind of change we're talking about here is moving from a relatively divided state to ever-increasing states of unity, a state of being unwholesome to a state of being whole, that holistic and integral medicine are about moving from a divided state to a less divided state. If a person wants to change, and we're talking about the evolution, the development of value spheres, if a person wants to change, there's nothing in the world that can stop them from changing. And if a person is sincere in wanting to change for their own sake, for the sake of those in their immediate sphere of influence, and for the sake of the generation of virtue, the evolution of consciousness itself, for the greatest possible reasons, anyone who wants to change, it's in their own hands. And nothing on heaven and earth could stop them. Hmm. And if a person doesn't want to change, all of the spiritual practice, all the ayahuasca, all the tantric sex, all the coaching in the world, all the gurus in the world, all the yoga, tai chi, meditation, all of it isn't going to make any difference.
Hmm.
It might help them feel better. It might give them a lot of groovy experiences. But at the end of the day, when they have to face themselves, at the, you know, when they're drawing their last breath and say, did I do it? Way, and a person can no longer lie to themselves when the filter is gone,
hmm.
it, you know, it's not going to turn out very well.
Yeah.
So it's just very simple. And if a person does want to change, nothing's going to get in their way, and then all the practices will fall into place and be useful.
Hmm.
Of course, some more useful than others. But practice only has a place in, and this is the first chapter of Nourishing Destiny, maybe the second chapter, it's on will. All the Chinese spiritual traditions, Taoist, Confucius, Buddhist, they all said the foundation of spiritual life is willpower. Clarity of will, clarity of intention. What's a person's bottom line? So if a person's bottom line is integrity, then it's going to turn out all right. And if a person has, if there's anything that's more important than integrity, when the going gets rough, they'll sell out integrity every time.
Mm-hmm.
And their confidence will be ruined. They'll experience discouragement and doubt, and they will not progress.
Mm-hmm. My feeling is, just as I'm listening to this, and I think a lot of people can relate, is that, you know, this, it comes as kind of a relief to the practitioner to know that, you know, our patients have responsibilities to the treatment process as well. Because if they're not ready to change, and they're not willing to change, then, you know, we can be the most incredible acupuncturist on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily mean that's going to amount to anything. And yet I also hear a lot of practitioners that, you know, either subtly or not so subtly take the treatment process and all the responsibility of that onto their own shoulders, and basically try to, try to do something for their patients that maybe they're just not capable of doing because that patient isn't really willing to change.
It's a little deeper than that, Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
If the practitioner themselves doesn't want to change, and if the practitioner's primary orientation in life is still needing time to overcome their own past,
mm-hmm.
then, and we're just talking on a spiritual level here. I'm not talking on a physical level. You can still make back pain better. You can still make arm pain better. You can still treat infertility. I'm only talking on a spiritual level, the deeper levels that my work is focused on. If the practitioner's value system is there's a problem, I need more time to overcome it, ready yet to renounce my own suffering for the sake of the whole, then no matter how good they are technically, they're going to be transmitting the value to the patient of you need more time.
Mm-hmm.
You're not ready yet to renounce your own healing. You're not ready yet to create your own future. Now, I know for a fact, for an absolute fact, that 95, 97%, 98% of the acupuncturists I ever went, that I've ever met in my life, and I've met a lot, went into this touched by a call to do the greatest amount of good that could in this incarnation for human beings. People have gone into this, you know, because you'd have to be an idiot to go into Chinese medicine thinking you were going to get rich.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, especially one person who was earning a living doing it. So it's not that we can't all earn decent livings, But I mean, you know, if you wanted $40 million, this isn't the quickest way to it. And everywhere I go, everyone I've met in all the years I've been doing it really went into this because there was a spark of recognition very deep inside. But what I've seen is people have settled for way less than taking their heart's own deepest calling seriously enough and giving it the consideration and the respect and the dignity that it really is due.
Interesting.
And the reason for that is there's no model in culture for doing that.
Right.
In a culture where the highest thing you can possibly do is be compassionate. And compassion makes sense for the sense of the world who can't afford $50 a week for an acupuncture treatment. But it isn't the thing that on average most people who can afford $50 a week for acupuncture need. It's a beautiful thing to have compassion for others, but it's very interesting to contemplate what part of ourselves wants compassion from others. I think it's a very illuminating contemplation. Compassion is good, sure, and what part of ourselves wants it? It's great to give it, but what part of ourselves wants to be unconditionally loved? The part that doesn't really want to give up suffering.
Right.
But people would have to look into this for themselves.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, that kind of takes us into this question of creating a new medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's kind of what your vision is these days, and, you know, part of the reason why I wanted to have you on this call, and I think you've already said a fair amount about that, but can you talk a little bit more, Lon, about why we need to create a new medicine?
Well, historically, the greater survival challenges that faced human beings, the force of natural selection, as it were ourselves. Basically, until the Industrial Revolution, where in the developed world, where a small part of the world really still, when people had indoor plumbing and septic systems and climate control, and they didn't have, you know, they lived in democracies, and didn't have to worry about the church and state coming for them while they were sleeping at night, and didn't have to worry about starving to death. Prior to that occurrence, whether you lived or died, really, everyone in the world had to do with how much days did that occur? What were the climatic conditions? Were you exposed to too much heat? Were you exposed to too much cold? But with concurrent with the discovery of evolution in the 1800s and the subsequent Industrial Revolution, the modern period and into the most postmodern period, our survival needs have been met. And if we look at the survival challenges that face humanity today, and this is all prefaced with the realization that Chinese medicine has survived 4,000 years because it's helped every culture it's existed in meet the survival challenges it faced during every epic period, all of the survival challenges that face us today are a matter of human choice. It isn't God doing it anymore. It's human choice. The polar ice caps are melting. We're in the middle of the largest species extinction in a quarter of a million years. People with a 20 trying to get chemical and nuclear weapons. Monsanto has polluted the world's food supply with genetically modified seed purposely so they could have all the food in the world. And all of these, and we're, you know, all of these things are happening. They're all questions of human choice. And if they are questions of human choice, then they involve human values. Human values. And if they involve human values, that means human consciousness is the key issue here. And I've never found a medicine more potent for I do not believe there is one. But the problem is that we have this incredible medical system for doing this, but we're still in a very old value system. The Chinese are still practicing in a Confucian core value system. Communism is just an updated version of totalitarianism. I mean, you know, totalitarianism, I mean, it's just modern Confucianism. It's a low form of absolutism. Then they've made it only as far in China as what, as Descartes and dialectical materialism And they're nowhere near democracy. Nowhere near democracy. And above that, a very small percentage of Chinese medicine practitioners have made it to an actual 1960s core value, sort of egalitarian core value system, which is all based around emotions and just making people feel better without demanding anything from them. A patient lies on a table, you put needles in, you go in half an hour later, they don't know where they are, they look at you in shock. They forget where they are. They don't know how long they've been there. They don't know if the needles are in and out. They've had an experience beyond time and space. Their face looks different. All the tension is gone. They've had an experience beyond rate, and the patient comes back next week saying, oh, could you put those needles there again? That felt really good. And what does it come to if we're selling the most fortunate, most educated, most politically free people who've ever lived, who should be helping humanity face their challenges? What does it come to if we just keep reinforcing the idea that they need more time to heal and that healing is synonymous with feeling better? It isn't. To have integrity often means doing things that are that feel awful. And if we're practicing integral medicine and holistic medicine, then it is only about integrity and nothing else. And, of course, that integrity includes physiological function and integrity of the body. But at the point, neck pain isn't the most serious thing. Christopher Reeves, who was a quadriplegic with no real hope of recovery in his lifetime, at the level of the development and integrity and dignity of his own consciousness, set quite an example for all of us. And we shouldn't take that casually. We shouldn't say good for him. We're capable of that and more. And people have to take that seriously. I've never met a person who didn't underestimate what they were capable of.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Except for crazy megalomaniacs, and maybe I am one. Some people think I'm a naive idealist. And
yeah. Well, you know, it brought up a question for me as you were talking about the patient that has had this experience of kind of transcending time and space for a few moments on your acupuncture table. And, you know, aside from, you know, holding a certain personal presence, you know, based on choosing to evolve in your life, what do you do in that situation? Because you're talking about, like, demanding more of your patients on some level. I mean, is there something that you actually say to them? I mean, I'm sure it's based on the context, but I mean, if you could give us a little insight into maybe how you communicate with your patients to convey that sense of, what's demanded of them in the treatment process.
One of the problems with Chinese medicine is we learned it through postmodernism, so that individual one-on-one medicine is relevant anymore. Every human being, even if you're treating one person in a room, they have to be treated in the context of their culture. And Chinese medicine, out of all the medicines we have, out of the three heater and the four divisions and the five elements and the six stages and the seven pathogens or demons and the eight principles and the stems and the branches, out of all of it, there isn't one model that studied culture. Why would that be? Because the Chinese only had one culture. Very ethnocentric, China, the middle country. And of course, they were at a pre-modern level of development, not at a world-centric level. But one has to become a real student of culturing different levels of cultural development. We need to be able to look at each person and see what is their value sphere. What level of development are they at? If George Bush comes in, or Karl Rove comes in, or Baba Ram Das comes in, or Ken Wilber comes in, you're going to have to treat all of those people. You know, if Eckhart Tolle shows up, they're all going to get treatment because they have different level value spheres. And let's just admit it. I mean, most of us aren't that interested in what I'm talking about. Not really. Most patients aren't either.
That's what I call it for Elon.
The one. So the thing is that, the point is to be able to reach people, to be able to know who's sincere, what's their actual level of intellectual, emotional, cultural, social and spiritual development, and to be able to see where they really are, to see how much have they really seen, how much do they really know, how hard have they really tried to live up to it, how much pretense is there, and how serious are they actually, and then to address each person. My goal is always tell a person a little more truth than they're comfortable hearing.
Mm.
Always ask but you can only do this if you're putting in 100 times more effort than the patient in. If you're putting in 100 times, 1,000 times more sincere effort to really develop, to really move forward, to really see the parts of all ourselves we'd rather not see, to take on our own level of pretense, and to really realize our own level of inertia, disinterest, and hypocrisy, and to take that on, then it's reasonable to ask for a little more from each person. If a person says they're interested, find out how interested, and keep challenging them, and keep having faith, confidence in their potential. What I do in treatment is I only relate to the part of the patient that has no problem and that is absolutely interested in moving forward and isn't cynical, is already well, has always been well, could never be anything but well, the person.
Hmm.
Regardless of their level of engagement, it's the only part I will relate to with my patients. And as long as you keep shining the light of consciousness on that, you never know when a person might pop. When you shine the light hard enough, you embody that enough, you be that yourself, and you shine that light on the person, you never know when, my God, and they just see that themselves and intuit a higher potential for their own lives, a higher integrity that they could embrace now. But it means taking on an awful lot of conditioning. Chinese medicine dealt with certain kinds of conditioning, elemental conditioning, that's all external, all seasonal, constitutional conditioning, but in the sense of the elements. But what they didn't deal with was conditioning, religious conditioning, nationalistic conditioning, social conditioning. I mean, you can tell the difference between someone who grew up on the North Shore, the South Shore of Long Island, Brooklyn, Greenwich Village, the Upper West Side, the Upper East Side, New Jersey, and Westchester. They all have their own conditioning.
Mm.
The Chinese weren't aware of any of this, and not just because they didn't know about New York City.
Right.
Right? But everybody had black hair.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, they had no mass communication, no transportation, far from a global-centric view. Most people grew up in China, died by the time they were 30, and only knew the people who lived within 5 miles of them, if even that. So everyone had a very ethnocentric view of the medicine, a very ethnocentric. And you can still see that ethnocentric view in many of the Asians who practice today anyway. The Japanese have their professional organization, and the Koreans have theirs, and the Chinese have theirs, and very ethnocentric. But many, many Americans, whether they're Chinese, Koreans, or Japanese, but many Asians who grew up in the West, who grew up in Europe or Canada or the United States, have moved far beyond an ethnocentric level of development.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
So all this conditioning, tribal conditioning, animistic conditioning, ethnocentric, nationalistic, this is all stagnation in terms of Chinese medicine. But it's not mentioned in our medicine, but it's all stagnation. It all isn't real. Are we not?
Right.
We know, at least those who've had spiritual experience know undoubtedly that there's only one. And those who haven't had it, at least intellectually, know it's true. It's what the whole holistic model of Chinese medicine says, there is only one. And the first thing to do with any patient is to recognize what they know and then awaken their conscience so they feel the moral pull to at least live up to what they already know. Forget teaching anybody anything new. Trying to teach somebody at George Bush's level about the five elements is ludicrous.
Mm.
And in fact, no one has to know about it. All you have to do is recognize what a person actually professes to believe in, and then awaken their conscience and get them to start striving to live up to that. Because only when a person is striving to live up to what they already know is true, can they ever possibly be ready to move beyond it.
Right.
And the problem is, as practitioners, we become very cynical and disinterested in living up to our own medicine and living up to the greatest call of our medicine, which is to become unified human beings who are free from cynicism and doubt about the most important things in life.
Now, when you are experiencing a higher state of unity like that in your own being and as a practitioner, I mean, my assumption would be, I'm not necessarily saying I'm there personally, so my assumption would be that when you stretch the patient a little bit and you tell just a little bit more truth than maybe they're used to hearing, or then that would make them comfortable, whatever they do with that, however they react to that, is not something you need to be, as a practitioner, need to be personally invested in, right? Like, I mean, they might run screaming from your practice or just never see you again, or it might completely wake them up, right?
Well, there are a couple of things, you know. Just the first thing is, you said when you feel this, when you feel more unity,
mm-hmm.
The point is that if you're really developing your ethical sense, you're going to be coming from this place even when you feel completely separate and miserable.
Because
you have conviction in it.
Mm.
So it's a perspective, prime ultimate, the center of the circle. It's commitment to and conviction in and planting your stake in the ground that at all times, through all circumstances, you're going to come from there no matter how you feel.
Mm.
And the thing is, I recognized very early, I wrote one clinical case study, I think it was in Nourishing Destiny, about sitting behind a woman, and I touched her back during the first treatment to find a point,
mm-hmm.
and I could feel just this wave of nausea come over her, and I said the words, "You have a visceral repulsion to intimacy."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I treated her, and she left. And I came in the next day, and she had canceled all her appointments.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, oh, God, who was I to say that? And then about 5 years later, I got an invitation to her wedding out of the blue.
Right.
And
yeah.
I was on the reception line, and she walked up to me. And I said, okay, tell me why I'm here. And she said, 5 years ago, I saw you for one treatment. You sat behind me and you said I had a visceral repulsion to intimacy. And I remembered for the first time in my life being sexually abused by my music teacher when I was in first and second grade. And she said, I couldn't face you because you saw right through me. And I didn't feel comfortable working with a man, so I just went to a female practitioner, worked through my issues, and that's what's allowed me to be here today. And from that experience, you know, what I learned, not only can we as human beings function beyond our mind, but we function best when we're beyond the mind and beyond the ego. Because I don't know why I said that to her. I didn't plan that. Nothing in Chinese medicine taught me to say that. It wasn't the result of anything in terms of pulse diving. It just came.
Yeah.
And what I've cultivated in my clinical practice and what I'm, of course, trying to teach all my students where we're working is to really learn to develop beyond ego, beyond mind. And it's really the place that very good artists create from, right? So, or very good people in sports. You have that moment, you're in the zone. And what we're talking about is not just having it happen and saying, my God, what was that? This is science. We know how to do it. We know the exact steps, how to step beyond that place, into that place. We know what it is. And the goal is to live there, not to have it be an isolated occurrence, not just to have it happen in acupuncture in the treatment room or when we're painting or when we're singing or when we're doing martial arts or a sport magically, but to actually plant our stake in the ground and say, you know what, that's where I'm living. That's the self I'm never going to see. I'm never the friend I'm never going to see. The part of myself I'm giving my life to that.
Hmm. And so that, I'm just getting hit with like a feeling of poignancy as you're saying that. Like, you know, it's that feeling of like now is the only moment we obviously have to do that, and yet we're all very conditioned and, you know, into kind of habitually postponing that.
Well, the thing is, Kevin, what I'm talking about is so mind-blowingly positive.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Completely insane. It's completely insane for holistic integral thinkers with a world-centric, looking toward a cosmocentric view, who are as fortunate, as intelligent, and as gifted as we all are, who were so inspired to go into a profession. What I'm talking about is so positive and so available right now that it's completely insane for people to be spending the bulk of their time trying to overcome their own histories and get over their own history. And granted, some of us have had some hard, some terribly painful things happen. But what I've discovered in life, in clinical practice, is that compared to a person's potential, from this moment on, looking into the future, anything they've experienced in the past is completely insignificant. Any amount of suffering a person has compared to the potential of their incarnation right now, if they're interested, it's just completely insignificant. It's not worth, it's an illusion anyway. It just never happened. Never happened, never could have happened in the best part of who they are, which is already fine and just waiting for them to shift their attention to it and get going.
So I just want to make sure that people listening to what you're saying right now are really, really clear about this, because once again, in my own experience coaching practitioners, I do hear this a lot. There's that kind of sense of like, okay, what it really takes is making a choice right now to basically just shift your focus onto that part of you that it doesn't need to be healed. There's nothing else that you can do, right? I mean, it's literally a matter of like you either do that right now or you don't. And it's not like you need a process to get there, right?
Meditation isn't bad, but if you don't want to change, it won't work. And
right.
People need a lot of context for all this. But the revelation is that one part of us is wounded, traumatized, victimized, hard done by in life, loves healing but has no intention of ever getting better. And only other part of us can't even relate to the idea of healing. One part will never heal, and the other part doesn't need to be healed because it's spirit. It never entered the stream of becoming. It never entered the stream of becoming. It's always outside of this world, pushing into this world with only pure motivation and intention to take form further. More integrity, more integrity. Higher and higher and higher. 15 billion years of spirit creating more and more intricate vessels for it to realize itself through. And as far as I can tell, we're the pinnacle. Now, it's true that turtles and ducks and sponges aren't destroying the world, but they also didn't write Sgt. Pepper's Starry, Starry Night or paint a picture Starry, Starry Night or write Shakespeare. And they're not going to save themselves. And that brings us to, well, why does it matter? You say, well, people say to me, well, maybe we're not supposed to survive. And that's very superstitious. It's based on the pre-modern belief that there's a white guy out there with a beard. Whole thing's predestined, and we're just puppets, and there's no role of human will. And really what I'm pointing to here is the absolute awakening of human choice, of the choosing facility. We're the ones creating the future, folks. God isn't creating the next human being. We're already doing it with recombinant DNA, nanotechnology, vitamins, Chinese herbs, acupuncture. We're designing the next human being. And the problem is that our level of ethical development hasn't reached our level of intellectual development. So really, again, we're looking at value spheres, you know, and if we're not very interested in living up to the higher order implications of the five element eight principle model, then our patients aren't going to be interested in living up to the higher implications of anything we do with those models. So their experience beyond time and space, their experience of freedom, their experience of no problem is only going to stay an experience. It's just going to be another experience they paid for.
Right. So Lonnie, I have one other question that I wanted to cover with you here just briefly. Maybe we could open it up to questions from the audience here after that. I wanted to discuss just a little bit about what is integral medicine and what are its implications, because I think that's a powerful term and a lot of people that concept, but I wanted to hear your end of that. Like, what, how would you define that, and what does it mean to you?
Well, look, integral medicine can mean many. Look, these days, integral medicine just means you, like, eat at Ben and Jerry's, brush with Tom's toothpaste, wear Birkenstocks, and light some incense. I mean, it can mean many things. A higher order, there's so much narcissism. What a lot of people mean by integral medicine is, I took a workshop in this, and I took a workshop in that, and I did a little of this, and I studied some of that, and it's integral medicine because I'm just one person, and I'm doing it. A lot of doctors think, I'm practicing integral medicine. I took a two-week course in acupuncture, and I studied a little homeopathy, and it's integral because I'm integrating the very little bit that I know. Real integral medicine, means it requires an integral practitioner. And an integral practitioner has to be able to think linearly, causally, reductionistly, mechanistically, holistically, synthetically. They need to be able to have actual experience with the momentary field as it exists in the universe right here, right now, with all things arising, all things changing in this ever-present moment. But they also have to understand the 14 to 15 billion years of cause. They need to have the left and right halves of the hemisphere integrated. They need to understand Chinese science and spirituality, the realization of Buddha's realization of emptiness. But they also, in their own experience, actually have to understand the sacrifice made, I don't know what really happened, but mythically by Jesus Christ. The idea of we have somewhere to go. We have somewhere to go. Right? Christ, Buddha had nowhere to go, but Christ had something to do. A future, a destiny to create. We need to bring the East and the West together in our own experience to integrally create a future that a human being in ourselves, as ourselves, that has never existed before on the face of the earth. So integral medicine, in its strictest sense, would adhere to doctrine, to principles laid out by Ken Wilber. There's a model called the four quadrant, all level model. And it's really, I think, more than we can go into here, but it does mean that when I put a needle in a patient, I expect their relationships to change. I expect there to be physiological, materialistic changes that could be measured. In other words, their blood pressure, the patient felt more relaxed. Because they were more relaxed, their relationships changed in their family. We could measure that their blood pressure was low. And the culture has to change. There has to be change in culture. So for me, the whole point of putting a needle in or giving someone an herb, we need to radically change culture, and we need to do it now. And we have to stop BSing with all this new age self-indulgent, hairy-fairy, animistic kind of stuff that we've been, you know, the age of Aquarius stuff that we've been stuck in for 40 years. We need to start taking, we need to start realizing that if we're concerned with the spiritual practice of medicine, it has to stop being cynical about the possibility of enlightenment for ourselves, not just in our lifetime, but right here, right now. And then we have to do the work to find out what does that mean? Because we have a lot of myths like, well, if you're enlightened, it means that you have no ego, and someone could saw your legs off with a hacksaw, and you'd feel no pain and love them unconditionally for doing it. And this is just superstitious myth. It's up there with virgin births and Lao Tzu riding to heaven on the back of a crane. We need to start really taking ourselves seriously.
Take us a couple minutes, Juan.
Just before we open it up, let me tell people I'm happy to stay on until my battery dies in my cell phone answering questions, having discussed them. So I'm very honored to be here.
Oh, it's
and
great.
I would just, you know, tell everybody it really is my pleasure, and that, you know, I'm more than happy to take questions. that I answer all emails. I want people to know that I have an online discussion group on yahoo.com called Nourishing-Destiny. We have 800 practitioners on there discussing these things every day, as well as technical questions and relations. It's all going to a new site very quickly with video and people like Kevin and other leaders in the field giving their own courses on the site for CEUs. The site is free, so sign up on the Nourishing Destiny site now. If you can't get on, send me an email and I'll sign you up. And I do give a 2-year course in Stockbridge, Massachusetts. Anyone who's interested, I'm happy to. It starts every September. It's a fantastic course. And in terms of answering questions, if you have a question, is it star 6 to unmute, Kevin?
It's star 7 to unmute. And just FYI, before we open it up for questions, I will be sending another separate email with instructions of how to get in Lonnie's forum. And, you know, if I believe there is a website link that that you can learn a little bit more about his 2-year clinical integration class, which highly recommend it. That's basically how I it made all the difference. So.
And let me also take one moment to say that, you know, I've known Kevin since he really first started practicing, and it's just fantastic to see where he's come. And I always refer, whenever anyone asks if they have problems, you know, or trouble or need help building a practice, I always refer them to Kevin with absolute confidence. And I've seen nothing but fantastic results with everybody that I have referred to you, Kevin. So thank
Great.
You.
Yeah, thank you.
Because we need to do this, and we need to have strong practices, not just so we can earn a living, but so we can take over the world.
Yeah,
right?
Revolution, absolutely.
Revolution, absolutely.
That's where it's at. So so if you do have a question for Lonnie, it's star 7 to unmute your line. So go ahead and jump right in here.
Well, I'm Sydney Walker again, and I'd like to know, I do 5-element acupuncture now after I was trained in regular how to pass the state bar or state exam, but but I love the 5-element ground and points like that. If the spirit's already always is okay, or it's already healed,
it's a great question.
Yeah.
So Worsley had the idea of treating at the level of 3 levels. You could treat at the physical level, the emotional level, or the spiritual level. Right?
Mm-hmm.
When you're treating at the spiritual level, you're not treating spirit. You're directing a person's consciousness to an aspect of spirit which is always pure and untouched by life. The spirit itself can never be sick, ever. Ever, ever, ever. By definition, I mean, spirit is sunlight. It's just light. It's always light. It's never anything but light. It's always shining. You could send all the garbage in the world to the sun. It would just burn off before it got there. And there can be cloud cover. So if someone's spirits are down and there's cloud cover and you do points that direct a person, you don't even have to get rid of the clouds. There is nothing in the way. There can never be a physical block to this except for organic brain damage. You're directing a person, you're awakening consciousness to itself. The clouds don't even have to leave. I mean, metaphorically, you could drain damp, you could give air chantang or banja hoputang, get rid of the clouds. 1 second, consciousness remembers who and what it is and says, oh, there is no problem. The revelation, there is no problem. And so you're really awakening. When you treat the spirit level, you're directing consciousness to itself, awakening consciousness to its own unsullied pure nature. And frankly, Worsley started as brilliant as, I mean, he was a remarkable man, but he did this in 1948 through the 50s and 60s, and much of what you know about spiritual level treatment came through students of his who learned Chinese medicine during the arising of the humanistic psychology movement and the era of the sensitive self. And most of what you learned is sort of a psychological approach to treatment, not really a spiritual level approach. Now, anything you do, like treating a point like that, you know, you can give a person LSD. A person can sit with a guru and have a mind-blowing experience, But you've probably noticed that different people, a group of people can have the same experience, but draw very different conclusions based on that experience. So just as, so if one person will look very superficially into something or not at all, one person will have a divorce and their conclusion is, next time I'm going to get a blonde. And another person will have a divorce and their conclusion might be, you know, real fullness in life, moment of destiny, the fullness that comes from integrity is independent on the presence of another person. But they both had the same experience. So what I'm talking about is doing a point like Kidney 24 might provide a very profound experience to a person. I'm talking about us being mature enough within ourselves to create a context in treatment where we have the maturity and the depth of experience in terms of that point, because it's on kidney. We would have had to have stepped forward in the face of our own fear, taken this leap, and really engendered wisdom to have confidence in the unknown. So if we've gone past our own fear and developed confidence in living beyond the mind in the unknown, then we're going to help be able to create a context in which that point can be very potent in someone's life. Otherwise, the person may just, you know, they may have a tremendous experience and feel very good for a while and breathe better and might even tell you, boy, my energy's better. But it doesn't really at the level of ethics and value spheres that they're really going to develop. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So, you know, I think we have to have real respect for Worsley and real respect for all the traditions because they're what brought us here. But a big part of my message is that at best, most of us are stuck in 1968 to 1972 in terms of value spheres. We really need to go a lot further than that.
And when you talk about further, you seem to be talking about a new paradigm, a new way of thinking about it. But are you all, do you recognize or do you think of this as also really having been talked about already in the ancient Taoism before Confucianism came in and colored things?
No, in the Chinese language that can be translated as evolution.
Mm-hmm.
The Taoists were all about circular change. Winter, spring, summer, late summer, fall. The 64 hexagrams all going in a circle. All of their models were circular.
Mm-hmm.
And in the West, to everything, turn, turn, turn. There is a season, turn, turn, turn. All cycles, all circles, all time was circular. Now that when we say time is circular, we're referencing time to emptiness, to zero. So we're talking about the enlightenment of the Buddha. And that's important. If you look at the universe through the eyes of emptiness, you see that it doesn't exist. But if you look at emptiness through the eyes of the evolutionary impulse, you see is infinite potential and the capacity for greater and the urgency and capacity and the passion for more and more and more integrity. So if you look at the world through the Buddha's eyes or through Lao Tzu's eyes, you see an illusion. But if you look at emptiness through the eyes of the evolutionary impulse, all you see is the capacity for infinite virtue and integrity right now. And it's important to be able to hold both those views. That's what an integral holistic view is. And we are capable of perceiving that simultaneously. We actually all are. So I think we like to fantasize, you see, that in the good, see, the Taoists as Chinese, as practitioners of Chinese medicine, look, the first question in the Nei Ching, the first medical book, was how come in the good old days people used to live to be in their 90s and now everyone's sick in their 40s? So even 500 BC, they were looking back to the good old days. And what I'm saying is, no, forget looking back. That's history. Don't look back. Don't fantasize. This is the best time to be alive that's ever lived, that's ever been. More people live in better circumstances now and have more freedom, more food, better nutrition, more political, social freedom, more education, more shelter than at any other time in history on the planet. So we live in a challenging time, but it's an exciting time and a thrilling time. Albert Einstein said that we can never solve problems using the same thinking that created those problems. So it's Taoism, Confucianism, Buddhism, Hinduism that brought us here, Judaism and Christianity and Sufism. They brought us here. They each have beautiful things. They each have good things, but we're going to have to take a step beyond all of it. If we, you know, I'm talking about following the utopian impulse and being naive, not being naive, but being idealistic and totally practical at the same time. Okay, what's this really going to take?
And I have a hard time with the practical thing. I can kind of go into that idealistic mind. So how do you talk to patients about this is what you're about, or do you not? And just, I mean, do you talk to them about
that's
who you are, but when you, if you have to promote yourself, your work, you know, I guess.
Well,
that's
I have
where,
a full practice.
Yeah, I don't. I give it away a lot, so I guess that's why I need to work with Kevin. But how do you talk to people about, how do you talk to people about what you do?
Well, Sydney, just to be honest, I'm mostly concerned with getting practitioners to this point.
Mm-hmm.
See, the thing is that obviously, I mean, well, I'm pointing the way to something. And if one is sincere in it and pursues this, then the result is really virtually guaranteed. And then when in 1 second, all your questions about what to do with other people are answered. But it's really just about, in this, in terms of the spiritual practice of medicine, it isn't a technique. There's no information out there. Forget esoteric acupuncture. Forget needling kidney 24 and doing devil's treatments. All that, I mean, I could teach my 9-year-old how to find those 7 points.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a technical thing. I could teach him how to recognize it and stick the needles in. It's really, the Taoist canon said the only true medicine is consciousness. It's our consciousness. It's where we are. And when we're in a certain place, not in a feeling place, but when we're looking at our lives through a certain perspective, when we're looking at the world through the eyes of the authentic self, the best part of ourselves, the part that was never wounded and traumatized. When we're taking an already victorious position, that's infectious. People are going to want to know. They're going to say, wow, tell me. And I just find the more I give to this. And then the points always just do what the points do. But the whole thing is the context that exists within. The culture, it's like if you're treating a woman who's being battered, no matter how much you do kidney 24, if she keeps going home and getting beat up, it's not going to do very good.
Mm-hmm.
And if you keep doing these points and people keep going out into a narcissistic culture and they keep leaving with the, where all their energy is, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine, me, 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 me. I need more time, I need... They leave your office going, boy, this feels great. I can't wait for my treatment next week.
Mm-hmm.
You see, we need a radical, radical shift of perspective. But thank you for your question, and why don't we see if anybody else?
Yeah, thank you.
And I'm always happy to sign on to my news group, and we've got many, many people there pursuing these things every day.
Wonderful. How do I unmute myself? I mean, how do I mute myself
remute?
Again?
Star
yeah, 7.
You go star 6.
Okay.
Star 6.
Anybody else have a question for Lonnie? We have just a few more minutes here. So star 7 to unmute
your
line.
I'll stay longer. Anyone else?
People are being shy, Lon.
Hey, Lonnie?
Maybe they all left. Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Who is this?
This is Kevin over in Alaska.
Oh, yes, Kevin. Okay, great. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I just wanted to just say
what
that...
What the hell is going on over there with that woman?
You mean with our governor? Or with...
Yeah.
With...
Okay. As long as she stays your governor, I have no problem with it. Okay, anyway, what's up?
Look, I just wanted to say that the work that we've done... Just in the weekend that we spent with you was fantastic, and it's really everything that you're talking about today, to the extent that I put in place in our practice, it's generated results that are just amazing. And then in conjunction with Kevin's help with practice building, it's just transformed our practice completely. I mean, it's hard even to describe the kinds of changes that have been going on, but I mean, just from a practical standpoint, I mean, our practice has doubled in size. And, you know, at first there was a dip, and then as we really just pushed through that, with Kevin's help and just staying persistent, we're enjoying the work more, we're getting better results, and the word is getting out that we're doing something different. It's real, and it's mm-hmm. amazing, and it's really challenging.
Everything I'm saying is real. Everything I'm saying. Everything I'm saying is true. I never teach anything that isn't what I'm doing every day and isn't real in my own experience and isn't actually happening. But one can hear it and be cynical, but you're finding out that it's actually so, right?
Yeah, and the other part of it is that there's a part of me that actually is intimidated by the potential.
Right, sure.
And I mean, it's like if this is possible, and I'm just nicking the surface of this, it's like, where can this go?
Potential and fear are both properties of the kidney, right? The thing that most people are most terrified of in their lives is their own unrealized potential. It's the thing almost everybody is most scared of. They'll say, oh, I'm scared of this, and I'm scared of that, I'm scared of death. The thing people are actually most scared of is their unrealized potential for living.
Hmm.
It's physics. It's just actually so.
Hmm. Right. I've never heard it said that way, Lon. I think that strikes something inside of me. But I've never heard that before. Being partly water constitution myself, and Kevin, you are too, right? I think you and I
deal
with that one a little harder than most people.
Right.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Kevin. I mean, that's always helpful to hear your experience and, you know, implementing some of what Lon's talking about. I think that's great to hear for people on the line.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, thank you. I was told there were like hundreds of people on this call, so I'd love to hear from people that, you know, who I haven't met before.
Hi, this is Ellen in Florida.
Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have a question. I'm just trying to, sometimes when there's concepts that it's kind of hard to wrap your mind around, and it's probably you just need to let go of your mind, but
mm-hmm.
when you're talking about the whole aspect of, well, I know for me, I get real hooked into people who seem to have something where they'll fix me or help me. And you're talking about just letting go of the concept that you need that you are, if you step into a place where you're in spirit rather than the physical, then that's what is, I just wanted to hear again, sometimes the phone cut out when you were talking.
You know, the things that I'm saying, they could be taken as intellectual concepts.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we're on a call where I'm being asked questions and I'm lecturing a little and we don't have a long amount of time together. But just simply put, right now, just practically, in your own experience, are you able to put your attention on a part of yourself that is fine, that doesn't have a problem? Despite everything going on, despite your history, despite anything that's actually happening, in your own awareness, are you able to find with your, you know, focusing your consciousness, any place in yourself that is actually fine?
Well, yeah, because if at the moment you sit and think about it, everything you're worried about is fears and ether. So
no, but I'm not talking about, Ellen, about thinking about it. I'm just saying, if you put your focus right now on the part of yourself that actually is clear, what's your experience of that part of yourself?
I believe I can find that at times, it's hard to hold to.
No, but I'm just saying right now.
Right this second.
If you do it right now, what's your experience of that part of yourself?
Great quietness.
Uh-huh. Anything else?
Not that I can verbalize.
Is it positive?
Yes.
So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how positive is it?
How positive is it?
Yeah, scale of 1 to 10.
You see, I just didn't hear the word positive.
Positive.
You said on a scale of 1 to 10, how, what is it? How positive?
Positive.
Is it?
Positive. You
positive.
Said it was positive.
Yes.
So how positive is it?
Well, if 10 is the most positive, then that place is a 10.
Good. So the thing is, if a person was 99% crazy, but 1% sane, if their mind was 99% filled with chaos, but 1% of themselves was spacious and free and didn't have a problem and was a 10 out of 10 positive, then if a person really was sincere and put 100% of their focus on the 1% that was fine, they could conceivably see something very, very quickly that could have a profound effect in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say a person did do that. It wouldn't take much time because we're just talking about a shift of attention. If a person did do that and did have a very, very profound experience of seeing that the other 99% was crap, and this 1% was the only thing that was real,
mm-hmm.
and then they felt a moral obligation to bring that to 2%, you think if a person recognized it was 1%, you think through hard work they could get it to 2%?
Mm-hmm. Oh, if it's 5, might as well do 10.
Right, and you think it would be reasonable to get it to 51% if a person applied some effort sincerely for some time?
Mm-hmm.
51%, you're home free.
Mm-hmm.
The wheel spins the other way,
mm.
and it's in our hands. Nothing could be more exciting. Look, it's why we're on the planet. There's no other reason. God didn't spend 15 billion years to put us here so we could generate a culture and fund a 401k plan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And despite what the Buddha say, God didn't put us here to suffer either. I find that very hard to relate to, having been raised in great privilege. So what I experience is a lot of gratitude. And then the ultimate gratitude isn't a feeling, it's an action, which means we take our incarnation and what we're really here to do very seriously, and then we do it. So, you know, so you start with 1%, but the goal is 51%. And Ella, I mean, it doesn't have to take long. Doesn't have to take long. It's a short-term goal. It isn't a medium or a long-term goal.
Mm-hmm. The long-term goal is the work?
Well, so once you get to 51%, it's still development forever.
Mm-hmm.
And heck, even if you got to 100%, which none of us probably ever will, though I don't know, but even if you did get to 100%, you just want to spend the rest of eternity. Every day you'd probably get up and say, boy, there's so much more I could be given. You see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Ellen.
Thanks.
Well, Lon, why don't we, if somebody has just one more quick
sure.
question, we'll take that. Otherwise, we're getting close to the end here.
Anyone else? Someone I don't know?
star 7 to unmute your line.
Come on, guys.
Hello, Lonnie.
There.
This is Chris from Toronto.
Yes, Chris.
Can you hear me?
Thank you.
Yes,
sir.
You sort of answered my question I was having with the last caller there, but from a standpoint of someone who possibly hasn't been approaching their practice in this sort of sense at this point, what would you recommend as a good jumping off point to go forward in that sort of range, like some practical tips we could take back and start honing?
Well, if you can study with me, you should come study with me somewhere. I'll be teaching in New York City on October 18th for a weekend. So, and anybody on the call is welcome to come to that. It'll be Fantasformation, and he can send that out on that teaching. If you contact a school, the Institute of Traditional Medicine in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
or if you email me, I can put you in touch with a study group up there. That
okay. Very good.
So that would be good. So you'd start to possibly get involved, with a community of people. They're not acupuncturists, but it's sort of like, an integral.
Yeah, I'm sort of familiar with the Institute, yeah, and I know they're not all that way, but yeah.
Well,
sure,
the thing is, studying Chinese medicine isn't enough. You've really got to understand culture, understand the world, and we want to understand the world not from a 1970s postmodern perspective. We want to understand it. We want to really understand it from perspectives that are newly emergent and just coming in. We want to be able to look beyond that way we were raised. So, all I could really suggest is that, and, keep in touch with me. Join my news group and start engaging on the news group. All meaningful development comes from connection with human beings who are committed to meaningful development. It's not something... There's no such thing as individual enlightenment anymore. It isn't relevant. Individual medicine isn't relevant. We have 7 billion people on a planet. There are enough vessels for consciousness that something is emerging that has never existed before, and we don't want to be cynical about it. We want to bring it in. So, just contribute on my news group. Develop relationships with people who are further ahead than you are. Consciousness is a virus that can't exist.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Lonnie.
Thank you
very much, Kevin.
Yeah, you're welcome, Chris. So, Lonnie, let's maybe go ahead and wrap it up. And, if people have further questions for Lonnie, I'm going to be sending out an email with contact information so they can get a hold of you, Lon.
What I would just say in that regard is that people have substantive questions about what I've talked about, or something to do with Chinese medicine, please just sign on my news group and ask so the 800 people there can get a benefit from the answer. Because I don't have time to answer those kind of emails individually. I want to answer them in groups to generate discussions. But if people want to contact me directly about a course I'm teaching or, something like that, then of course that's the correct way to do it.
Great. That's good clarification
okay.
there.
Thank
so,
you, Kevin. It's been
my pleasure, Lon. So if anybody has any questions for me, you can contact us through buildyourdreampractice.net, and we have all kinds of contact information on there. So feel free to email me with any questions. And like I said, I'll be sending out an email to you all with a recording of this call and contact information for Lonnie's news group. And if you have specific questions about his course, you can email him directly about that, okay?
Okay, and can I get the last word?
Of course.
So
this is your
thank
call,
you
man.
All
you go.
So everybody, thank you very much for taking the time to sign on to anybody who's here. And again, it's been my privilege. God bless, and go out and do it. Thank you.
Great.
Good night. Okay, Kevin.
Great.
Good night.
Bye bye.
Okay. Good night. Good night.